happy heart sings your love.
This is Gorgeous Lives, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous. Today I'm thrilled to be interviewing Tracy Curtis Taylor, aviator and adventurer. You may have seen her on the BBC4 documentary about her trip in a biplane from Cape Town to Goodwood, England. Tracy calls herself a bird in a biplane. Tracy, a massive welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Oh, listen, what a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You win hands down for the most truly adventurous. And it's not just aeroplanes. You love anything kind of mechanical. I've read that you love cars, but you particularly go for old things, don't you?
I do. I find old engineering, I find it terribly alluring. But old aeroplanes have been a passion. I mean, I know most women think that's bonkers. You know, it's their idea of hell going for, you know, 2 months on a vintage car rally or even flying up Africa. I mean, not many people, gosh, you know, even 25-year-old males would be hesitant about doing that. So it was this classic American biplane, but they're beautiful to look at, you know, big radial engines on them. You know, nice roomy cockpit, strong and very reliable.
Workhorse.
That's what we needed. I just needed it to be reliable and strong in case I had to put it down, you know, in some remote area in Africa or on road or whatever.
Now, you did the same journey as another woman. Can you tell us about that? Were you following a journey?
I did. Lady Heath, not particularly well known anymore, but I first came across her story about 6 years ago. It was all, you know, it was they were our colonies. So she had a lovely time, sort of at cocktail parties and diplomatic events. In fact, when you look at her packing, she made a little inventory. It's almost like she's going on a cruise. You know, it's cocktail dresses, her pearls, her furs, novels, chocolates, tennis racket. I never got close to that. I mean, yeah, she was very flamboyant and very sociable, huge personality, and she had a lot of fun. And she did it over sort of 3 months and then came back, you know, to great acclaim.
Often it's the first people that do it don't get it, do they?
Well, it's a good point. You know, people say, why was she forgotten? But that's probably part of it, I think. And perhaps also the fact...
Maybe she was shameful in society's eyes and all that sort of thing.
I think that's... Undoubtedly is part of the story. Yeah. You know, people, she became a bit of an embarrassment. She became a drunk. She would disappear for months on an end. You know, she was depressive. You know, she was slightly, you know, but it was sad. It was sad because all she was trying to do was really achieve independence. Well, the history goes on before that because it was when I read about Lady Heath that crystallised the decision to do it. But I had wanted to fly Africa in an old aeroplane for at least 20 years before that. So ever since I saw the film Out of Africa, because my other fixation was the Karen Blixen story. So all my life I was you know, mesmerised by Africa. And I was out there when I was 19. I was sort of living and working in South Africa. And then I came back to England overland in a Bedford truck. And it was funny because when people said, oh, gosh, this flight's going to be really tough, I said, no, try driving it. 5 months, you know, through the wet season in the Congo, everybody with dysentery, you know, camping in just a sea of mud at the side of the road. I mean, that's tough.
Who were you with then?
Who was I with? They used to run these overland trips of Africa then. My first experience of actual flying was when I went back to Canada for a summer holiday with my twin sister. We flew in an airliner, you know, probably another Boeing. And I just loved the experience. I was there glued to the window, looking at the wing, watching the scenery, you know, the mountains of Greenland underneath us. And then during that holiday, I'd seen introductory flights advertised at a little airfield. And I thought, right, that's me. So while my twin sister went shopping, I went flying.
RadioGorgeous.com.
And this poor chap, this poor pilot, normally an introductory flight is about 20 minutes if you're lucky. This poor chap couldn't get rid of me. I was with him for the rest of the afternoon, 3 hours. He ended up taking me on a charter out to Vancouver Island. And that was it. But it wasn't honestly until I started working that I could afford to fly because I funded all of my own flying. And that was in my early 20s, by which time I had emigrated to join my twin sister in New Zealand. So that's where I started to fly. And I didn't want to be flying, you know, huge machines, you know, huge automated systems for hours and hours, straight and level, at night, over water, no appeal whatsoever. So once you get into sort of open cockpit, real stick and rudder handling, and air shows, display flying, organising air shows, you know, that was the route I went.
Have you done all that then?
Yes, I have.
Oh, what a outrageously good fun. Can you do loop the loops and everything?
Yes.
I can. I don't believe it.
What about walking on the actual wing? Have you done that?
No, look, you know, back in the 20s, the pilots would actually get out of the cockpit and stagger off through the struts and wires. You know, I mean, just a death-defying act. But no, I have no desire to walk on a wing.
So you were turned on by them. You worked in aviation. You spent all your money on it. It was your complete passion. Then tell us about this actual journey then.
Well, having made the decision back in 2009, it took another 4 years to pull it together. So this was a huge undertaking. You know, flying it was in fact relatively straightforward. Throughout the duration of the whole thing, with a three-man film crew...
Yeah, I was going to say, how did they film you then? Did they come up or did you have a camera on the actual... you know, wing or whatever, how did it
I had six cameras on my aeroplane. I was covered in cameras. I had them in the cockpit. I was constantly wired up. I was sitting on sound equipment. I had, you know, them all along the wing. And then
that was the technical thing to work out as well.
Well, it was, and it was a big issue everywhere we went to service these cameras and download all the photographic data, etc. And a big distraction, I might add, from the flying. And I, you know, it was quite difficult to combine all these different elements. There was an awful lot of pressure, because that's the thing. Flying is one thing, but the filming actually totally predominated in this. So this went on 24 hours a day. And I really had no experience of this. I had no idea what I was in for when
that's
I set off.
That probably helps.
Yeah, I might have. Well, that's right. There was eight of us, two aircraft, four different cameras, 65 pieces of kit, and all of that processed every day through African bureaucracy and border crossings. It was just logistically huge and exhausting.
So how many days did it actually take?
It took me 2 months to get home. To do the actual African part was about 6 weeks. So I felt that the whole, you know, I'm not sure I was seemed at my best.
Well,
really,
I remember you saying, I don't feel like it, but I've got to do it. You know what I mean? That must have been the hardest thing when you just weren't feeling... Because I imagine when you do that, you want to be 100% because you're taking your life in your hands. You know, you want to be... And imagine if you're a bit tired, a bit tense, anything, or you're going to land in a country you know has problems. It must have been, as you say, the pressure.
Look, it had its moments, but, you know... The flying was glorious, though. I've got to tell you, every time I'd even see the aeroplane, I could feel my pulse quicken. Aww. And by the time I was in it and taking off, believe me, there's something about this. You know, you just disengage and leave everything behind. And for a few hours, I'd just be in this wonderful, you know, woman and machine, you know, out there, you know, somewhere between Earth and space. And it was, and usually at low level. I mean, the flying was sensational. Often I wasn't taking off till, I don't know, 11 o'clock in the morning. So I was always flying in the worst heat of the day. It had a real impact on engine performance. You know, sometimes I'd just be wallowing. The aeroplane wouldn't climb. It was so hot. So, you know, there were just moments like that, which was frustrating to me, because the idea of sort of getting up at 5 a.m, getting airborne in that lovely, cool, liquid air and just taking off and, you know, being on the ground by lunchtime with a gin and tonic. That's how I'd envisaged the whole thing. But it emphatically didn't work like that. So it was. And, you know, a week into it, 2 weeks into it, I got a shocking cold. So I had a head cold for about 10 days, which, you know, was not what I needed. No. But I think that was just a symptom of the stress and fatigue, frankly.
Yes, definitely.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
Now, were there any really scary moments?
Oh, do you know, almost from the point of takeoff in Cape Town, it was scary. I mean, we were a day late getting away because of the weather, you know, it was... But I took off into a screaming southeast wind, so straight into really strong headwinds and battering turbulence. I was flying literally due east along the South African coast, and I was in the lee of some really quite serious mountains, and the turbulence was so bad, I just thought, oh, God... I've only been airborne half an hour. You know, this would be a complete downtrow if I have to turn around and go back. But you just press on through it. I ended up heading out to sea to try and find some smoother air because I was really frightened of getting into some really serious downdrafts, which actually sometimes can be greater than your ability to climb out. So I just headed straight out to sea, you know, big white caps, pushed on through it. And you know, the local pilot said to me, look, crack on through it, but as soon as you're around this next point, you'll be fine. But you see, here's the thing. I'm flying a vintage aeroplane into international airports. So I'm on finals into Entebbe, and the controller suddenly said, do a left-hand orbit because you've got an airliner coming in fast behind you. So this is a problem. I'm slow. So I do exactly as I'm told. I do a sort of left-hand orbit, but it only takes me a couple of miles from the center line of the runway. And the next minute, I'm looking down at this neoclassical mansion, you know, and I'm quite low. I'm only about 800 feet, so I had a good look as I was flying over. Saw the incoming airline positioned behind and came into land. And there I am. I'm met by the military police. And, you know, I was dragged off for this three-hour interrogation. And they just sat me down. And the next minute, he handed me a brochure on security. And there it was, 9/11, with a picture of the airliners flying into the Twin Towers. And I just looked at him. It took sort of several seconds for this to register. And I said, look, have you seen my aeroplane? I said, it's wood and fabric. It's a vintage aeroplane. I said, do you really think this represents a threat to Ugandan national security? But, you know, 3 hours of discussions and they finally let me go.
Wow.
But it was unpleasant.
You had the idea, you had the vision, you dared do it. Do you feel fulfilled from it?
Look, it was a fantastic thing to do, but I don't think one ever rests on one's laurels.
Well, not you, Tracy.
I feel like in a funny sort of way, you know, it's unfinished business. I feel like so much had happened in my private life in the build-up to that, and I ended up just selling out of everything, selling a house, selling all my worldly goods. And
was that to support it?
Well, yes, in a way, but it was also the breakdown of everything.
Or the relationship.
Yeah, totally. So it's funny how fate conspires to somehow divest you of all these trappings, and suddenly I just had my aeroplane and this burning desire to do it. And for the first time, I was completely free.
Are you a panicker at all, or are you a calm person? Tell me about your disposition.
No, I definitely say I'm calm. I'm one of three sisters, so no, it doesn't fit that stereotype of being the oldest and bossiest and most dominant. Mm. But I think I always had an appetite for adventure and excitement, you know, and that we had a, you know, a very rugged upbringing in Canada. So we were all, you know, we were all very outgoing and very fit and camping and swimming in lakes and rivers.
Yeah, what about your parents?
Well, my father was a journalist in the early days. You know, he was, my parents are from the north of England, from Manchester originally. And my father was evacuated to the Lake District during the war years, which is where he read all the Jack London books, the Call of the Wild stuff. And it was that I think drove the move to Canada. Back in the, you know, the early 60s. So there was a willingness to move in the family. You know, there was, I think, a sense of adventurism, which we all share.
Tracy, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. And tell us your website so people can look you up.
Oh, look, my website is birdinabiplane.com.
Can I just ask quickly, what biplane? Does that mean two engines? Or?
No, it's two wings. It's two wings. It's a top wing, you know, so my...
Of course, yeah. The two, yeah, magnificent man, yeah.
So, funnily enough, although my aeroplane is an American aeroplane, I had it sort of painted in British Racing green, the fuselage, and then the wings are in cream, so the double wing, so it's very, very distinctive.
Just like you, Tracy.
Oh, Josephine, thank you.
She's beautiful, she's talented, and she's a true adventurer. Thank you so much for coming on.
Delight, thank you.
No wonder my happy heart sings. Your love has given me wings. Nel blu dipinto de blu.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production 2015, produced and presented by Josephine Pembroke, edited by Anna Palinkas.